When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Composer Nathan Johnson has been working with his cousin filmmaker Ryan Johnson on a majority of his canon. He's here today to talk about Glass Onion on Crew Call. So Ryan and you, your cousins, where did the bulk of the hanging out go on? Was it in Colorado, on vacation? Was it in San Clemente?
All of the above, but we both grew up in Colorado together when we were pretty young, and that was where we first started making movies and music together in the suburbs of Denver.
And then I want to know what this pre-USC canon for him exists of. Were you making movies up until teenagedom? I mean, I know the story about Hook, the Hook soundtrack, and the VCR, you know. But was it an arsenal of them? What did you shoot on?
Yeah, we would shoot on kind of, you know, the evolving technology. So it started with the earliest that I kind of remember was like 8mm. I'm not sure there was like when we were really young, there was some janky camcorder that wasn't even a format. But yeah, every time we would get together, we would just make a movie. And, you know, we have a huge family, so tons of younger cousins. And we would just kind of spend a 2-week vacation making a movie with all of our younger cousins and then present it to the adults at the end of the vacation.
What was the, again, pre-brick? What was the pinnacle film that you got? What was the most epic film that you made? Was it his Evil Demon golf ball from hell thesis?
Well, Evil Demon was his USC final project. That by that point it had gotten it was shot on film and it was very professional. This prior to that, I mean, none of the family movies were that professional. They're hidden in a drawer and will never be revealed to the public.
And then were you always music or did you do other things? Were you camera?
We would kind of all shoot and edit. At that point we weren't, you know, when we were kids, we were not making new music for the movies. We were, you know, like you heard, I think Ryan talk about, we would have a CD of John Williams music and we would use that to score the movies. So Brick was really the first time, you know, I had also been in bands growing up. So I was kind of more on that track. And then Brick was the first time that Ryan was like, hey, do you want to do the score for this? And I dove in head first without knowing what I was doing.
What was your first instrument?
Guitar.
And then you continue? Did you like get onto piano and other things?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I mean, I love writing on lots of different instruments. I kind of find that, you know, you sit down at a different instrument and it totally changes the way you're going to write. Even if you're sitting down at an instrument that you're not very familiar with, that, you know, you get out of your brain, you get out of your familiarity and your fingers don't exactly land on their normal places. But yeah, I love changing it up when I'm writing.
One of the things that blew my mind was that Danny Elfman told me once, and I was in complete awe, but then realized maybe this just happens with all musicians, is that he's like, I can pick up any instrument and play it. And I was like, huh? I was all gobsmacked and amazed. But that's par for the course for any musician. You know, if you know music, you can pick up a clarinet, you can pick up a trumpet.
No? You would not want to hear me play clarinet. I mean, I'll add this caveat. I love writing on lots of different instruments, but I very heavily rely on the amazing orchestral players that we get to use to translate that. They get me by for writing, but I wouldn't want to be the one performing.
So tell us about your arc. Ryan goes to USC, you go to England?
Yep.
And you start with the Cinematic Underground.
Underground, yeah. I had I actually recorded most of that album when I was still in America, but we were kind of putting it up on its legs in a live show out in England, and that was around the time that Ryan was, he started editing Brick. He was just working on it in his bedroom on Final Cut Pro. And so simultaneously I had like a power book and a single microphone, and I started kind of pulling in the musicians I knew, and we recorded the entire score in my apartment, with a single microphone, and we were using wine glasses instead of a string section. We were beating on filing cabinets instead of timpanis. You know, it was very much a DIY, like such a low budget movie. So we didn't have the funds to actually, you know, kind of do it the way that I imagined it was done. So it was very much, but it was also kind of leaning into that broken aesthetic, which Ryan really wanted. You know, it was, I think Brick is the story of a high school where everyone listens to Tom Waits instead of, you know, pop music. So that all of that, I think, really served the vibe that we were trying to go for.
And then I remember this being a Focus Features film.
Yeah.
Did they wind up acquiring this at a Sundance?
Yep. Focus, we played at Sundance, and then Focus got it at Sundance and distributed it after.
It was, and when, you know, when it, you're his cousin, there's never been a fight that he's had to have with a studio to say, hey, listen, my cousin works on this, trust me. I think your work speaks for itself.
I mean, I think at the beginning it is that, you know, like, I don't know what all is going on behind the closed doors, but you know, he's also been working with Steve Yedlin, who he met in film school. And so I think there's probably some degree of like, no, this is my team. This is how we do it. We've been doing this for years. It's important to, you know, to work with these people.
And then he told the story that he couldn't get you on Last Jedi, and that the make good was an autograph, you know, of the CD of Hook, which, by the way, I have upstairs as well.
Such a good album.
The Far and Away. That's my. Did you ever hear Far and Away? The John Williams. Oh, you got to listen to that. Oh, it's very Celtic. The Ron Howard film.
Oh, nice.
Mind blowing. Very Irish. You have to. Oh my God. And very different for John Williams.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's an interesting, funny story. I mean, was because John, you know, John works here and there now, but with Last Jedi, he was locked and loaded, period.
Oh my gosh. They hired John Williams before anyone else on the Star Wars movies. Right. I mean, it's, yeah. Hey, that's just one of those franchises where as much of it is like related to his score. It's amazing. I thankfully I got to be at the recording sessions, which as a kid who grew up idolizing John Williams was just, you know, just the most amazing thing to get to be in the room when they play the opening fanfare.
Thank you.
the evolution of the score here with Glass Onion, and everything that you were able to do versus the first film. The first film, main theme, string quartet, and in this, it is just, how big is your orchestra?
Yeah, so we did a 70-piece live orchestra recorded at Abbey Road, which is also where we recorded the first Knives Out. But yeah, for this one, we just kind of wanted to push it all bigger, while at the same time still kind of honoring this sandbox that we had established for the first Knives Out. You know, Ryan was really excited about being able to hear all the instruments, right? About it being precise and sharp rather than just kind of a wash of sound. So even though we're going really big, we are still really focusing on melodic motifs and also, you know, miking the orchestra and paying attention to this precision that's all functioning between all the different sections.
But with, as far as your budget, did, like on the original film, did you just have a quartet or?
We did a full orchestra as well on the original film, but not as big as Glass Onion.
And then he was referencing Nino Rota.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
Well, Nino Rota is like one of my all-time favorites. And obviously we grew up kind of loving really these, you know, these melodic focused composers, right? And film composition has almost moved kind of away from that recently to more, you know, to ambient textural percussive things. And we grew up loving, you know, Nino Rota, Morricone, John Williams, and these are composers who just really make their imprint with these indelible melodies. And you know, so getting ready for Glass Onion, that's one of the things we're talking about. Nino Rota's score for Death on the Nile, this sort of opulent, lush, romantic European sound. And so that was kind of what we were going for with this. You know, Ryan, these are mysteries, obviously, but they want to be fun entertainments, right? Ryan talks about when he's writing this, he doesn't want to craft a crossword puzzle. He wants to craft a roller coaster ride. And so as we begin talking about the score, he's talking about leaning into the adventure, the voyage, the excitement, while at the same time bringing in all the tense elements that a murder mystery is going to need to have.
What's the process like? Does he roll off footage to you as he's shooting it and send it to you? Or do you get the film in thirds?
It actually starts much earlier than that. So at script stage, he sends it to me. And then I'm on set with, you know, I bring like a writing rig. So for this film, that meant that I got to go spend time in Greece with, you know, kind of at this amazing location. But I'm on set every day watching the performances, kind of seeing the whole movie come off the page and develop with these amazing actors. And then I'm writing really early ideas for melodies. You know, I'll be playing those for Ryan as we're shooting, and he can kind of tweak them or say a bit more in this direction. So it's very much all of it begins developing at the same time together.
And that's an anomaly for a composer to be on the film set.
Really a rare luxury. I mean, often you hear these stories of composers that are brought in with a few weeks to score the whole film at the very end of the process. But obviously, with our relationship, it's something that we can just start really early on, and it's kind of just the way that we've always done it.
Are dailies being shown literally with samplings of your score?
No, not at that point. It's basically like this time and space for me to go down alleyways, right? To just really branch out and explore different themes. And then that starts happening once we get a first edit. We get a rough edit, and then I start putting stuff up to picture and sending things over to the edit room.
Now, like you said, it's a roller coaster ride. You set mood quite beautifully and in a very epic way. But with these whodunits, is music a tease to the setup of a clue?
Yeah.
To point us in the direction?
I think so. I mean, I definitely think about it that way. And I think this is one of those things maybe on a second or third listen where you might be able to start picking this up. I think generally the music is happening in a, you know, in kind of a subtle under the table way, but I am playing around with the different characters' motifs. And, you know, in Glass Onion, for instance, there are themes that are really identified with certain characters, but another character at a time might steal that theme. And these are all these things underneath that's happening that, you know, I'm thinking about sort of as an emotional storytelling method that may not always get picked up, but they're definitely woven through the film.
And then talk about the new character themes that you developed for this. Like,
yeah.
Janelle Monáe's character has a theme.
Yep, Andy's theme is kind of one of the key ones that I cracked, and that one, you know, I first of all, her performance is just off the charts. I love what she did with this role, and it was just kind of mind blowing to see her craft that in real time on set. But then you get back and you start working with the picture, and it almost unlocks a whole other level. And I was like, oh wow, look at what she did. So that theme was really a nice challenge to me, because it's something that, you know, without giving away anything, it's something that, I don't know, it's almost like the groundwork that, and we can interpret that, as we follow her emotional arc through the story, we can kind of present it in different lights and move from, you know, from this power to this, you know, to this vulnerability. And I don't know, I'm like stammering around talking about her amazing performance and trying to evoke some of that range in the music, but really it's just tapping into what she did and getting to express that in some musical way.
What were the new instruments that you introduced for the sequel?
So we brought in harpsichord. That's really prominent.
I was going to say, and it's wonderful.
Thanks. Yeah. And that was, yeah. That was actually a Ryan ask, you know, I think he related that to all of these mysteries that he watched growing up. And then we also brought in
Grease.
Yeah.
Also the Grease fact. Yeah.
Yeah, and tuned glass. So we used lots of tuned glass back on Brick, but now we kind of bring that in again. And there's these like haunting tuned glass elements, as well as a percussive tuned glass motif that appears throughout the movie. That's played with mallets on glass. We brought the quartet back again, so there's a new string quartet for this, but it's supplemented by essentially by the orchestra going bananas. And it was just fun again to kind of use Knives Out as a jumping off point, but it, like we were saying, you know, this is a whole new mystery, whole new cast of characters. And so that's a really fun and rare sandbox to get to play in, where we kind of know the world, but we're doing a whole new mystery.
Growing up, the two of you, what was your cinematic core? What were like your top five films? Obviously Star Wars.
Yeah.
But what else? Was there anything eclectic that both of you connected on, where you're like, yeah. And, you know, where you had that spiritual, yeah, blood brother bond.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and Ryan's a few years older than me. So really what it was like is he would find these movies and pass them along to me. You know, it kind of felt like, I mean, we're cousins, but it felt like an older brother scenario. So he's suddenly discovering, you know, Fellini And he's like, oh, you got to watch 8 and a half, you know? And it's, so it's, I feel like in a way, it, like, a lot of my understanding of the cinematic language of how stories work comes from him. You know, he would, I remember early on, he sent me a biography of George Lucas, and he was, you know, it, but we're like film geek kids, you know, we're devouring anything we can get, you know, looking through the Industrial Light and Magic books to figure out how they did the special effects, and me geeking out on finding out how Ben Burtt would make the Star Wars lightsaber sounds. You know, and that played a lot into how we did the score for Looper, which was all field recordings. So I was on set with a field recorder, you know, recording industrial fans and treadmills. And then I kind of morphed all of those into the score. So, yeah, I mean, obviously it's like such a great sandbox to play in. But I've talked about this a while ago, you know, to the extent that any score has the ability to be exciting or bold or boundary pushing, that all really comes down to the director choosing not to sand off the rough edges. You know, it's and a producer kind of protecting that and trusting in that ability, you know, and Ryan doesn't want it to be polished and slick. He wants it to have that unique imprint. And so throughout the entire process, he really protects that and is always kind of egging me on to surprise him, to bring something new and fresh and different to the table.
And then what are you working on next?
So I'm actually right now in the middle of working on Ryan's doing a TV series called Poker Face with Natasha Lyonne. So it's kind of a case of the week detective series. And yeah, the score is a total left turn on that. We're doing something really fun.
Any inspirations there? Can you give us a hint? Is there a clarinet?
I'll tell you this. I bought a banjo. And started figuring out how to play the banjo for this one. That's not what you were expecting.
No, I love it. I love it. Have you seen the script to The Third Knives Out?
Ryan has not seen the script to The Third Knives Out. He, as soon as he writes it, I will let you know.
Nathan Johnson, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Crew Call podcast on Deadline. I'm your host, Anthony D'Alessandro. Make sure you subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode.